This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2021, Episode 12. Welcome back to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. Also want to send a shout out to our partners, Ticket Express, Husker Hounds, and Husker Max. We'll be talking more about those guys a little bit later on in the podcast. I'm Travis Justice. But the man you're really here to listen to is the one, the only, Dr. Rob Zadiska, who's coming off not a bad weekend. It's Labor Day weekend. Did you celebrate Labor Day as a kid?
I mean, how do you celebrate Labor Day?
Well, let me tell you how you celebrate
Labor Day. Well, let me rephrase it. I mean, we always had like a cookout or barbecue kind of thing. It wasn't like we had some kind of... like
celebration?
Yeah, we didn't pull out the Festivus pole or anything like that.
I grew up in Minden, Iowa, right? And my high school is combined with four different towns, even though it was called Tri-Center, which Tri would make you believe it's three. There was actually four towns, which was Minden, Persia, Neola, and Beebe Town. And Neola every year has a Labor Day celebration, which goes 3 days called Hoodoo Days.
Nice.
Yeah, so really when I was growing up, Labor Day was like bigger than the 4th of July because of the Hoodoo Day celebration, which, you know, coincided with like the first football game of the year. You'd have the parade, the marching bands, all that stuff. So Labor Day was actually pretty big.
Okay, that's actually kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah, so I know Omaha is a big salute to labor celebration as well. But yeah, I kind of grew up with Labor Day being a bigger holiday in my household than... you know, any other than Memorial Day or the 4th of July.
It wasn't like that. I mean, you had school off, obviously.
Yeah.
Although, actually, that was kind of back in the era where school usually started like that Tuesday after Labor Day. Summer was like the old school. It was like Memorial Day to Labor Day summer.
You mean the way it should be?
Yeah. The way it once was.
Yes, the way it once was, and maybe it should be again. But everybody thinks you got to be in school like the early part of August and go to the mid part of May. And you turned out just fine. You're pretty damn smart.
I did okay.
Yeah.
I did okay.
Yeah. I made it through. I snuck by. I'm not as smart as you, but I can talk for a little bit.
Well, the whole Hawkeye thing.
We'll get into that a little bit later. Or maybe we won't. I did see a picture of Cluster Johnson, former Husker Cluster Johnson, on Twitter this morning.
Oh, with Keegan?
Yeah.
That's a great pick.
Yeah, he looks good in black gold, doesn't he?
Hate to say it. No, wait. Are we talking Cluster or Keegan?
Both of them look good. Cluster looks so – he hasn't aged at all, you know.
No, he hasn't.
You know, he texted me this morning, says we're going to have to catch up. Maybe we'll bring him up here to record a podcast with us one time.
That would be a fun podcast.
And we may have to wait until like the last week of the season. And I know Keegan, I think, got a little bit of playing time yesterday. I wasn't playing that close attention as that game got out of hand. But we'll as we get before that Black Friday game, we can bring Cluster up. You just took a drink. You're drinking a Bloody Mary this morning, man.
Yeah, what are you drinking over there?
I'm going to disappoint you because I grabbed a seltzer. I know.
I'm completely unamused right now.
It's a Quirk seltzer. It's from Boulevard Brewing Company out of Kansas City.
And
it's a blueberry and lemon lavender.
Travis. Is there any alcohol in that thing?
4.2.
It is a hard seltzer?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm okay with that.
You're okay with a hard seltzer?
I'm okay with that.
Because most people say, I grew a vagina like when I drink the hard seltzer.
Not denying that, but at least it's got alcohol. I was going to be disappointed if that. I thought that was just like.
No.
Like. Just like a flavored seltzer.
No, this is a hard seltzer.
Okay.
And actually, this turns out to be, I know people like some people like the White Claws, they like the Trulies, they get into all this. This is made by Boulevard, and they've got some of the most unique flavors, but it's also been my favorite kind.
Okay, the blueberry lemon lavender idea, I'm kind of digging.
Yeah, I think we got this at Costco. We got a case at like Costco.
I mean, like if it was dish soap, it would work too.
But I've had some local, you know, seltzers because it's a big craze right now. And you see a lot of the local breweries jumping on the seltzer craze. And I get it because you're trying to make a buck. But if your seltzer sucks, don't sell it. And I'm not going to name the brewery, but I had one of the local seltzers. And I'm like, yeah,
not that good.
It just falls short.
Do you know what I haven't had a lot of?
Seltzer?
Hard seltzer. So, yeah, I got, like, no point of comparison here. I'm not sure I'd know what a White Claw tasted like.
I usually get the black cherry, and I do that usually when I'm on the golf course. I don't know what it is about.
Hey, Trav.
Yes.
No one cares.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. You're 100%. But, you know, the good news
is... Hey, did you mention what I'm drinking?
You're drinking a Bloody Mary.
Yeah. I know you mentioned that already. Yes, I'm just trying to get off the seltzer
talk. Yeah, because you're drinking, like, a real drink, and you didn't bring me a Bloody Mary. And usually this is a beer podcast, and maybe when we start recording...
it is before noon, so I wanted to stay within the realm, which I will say this very specifically. I didn't drink on the way here, but I'm sitting in my car with this mixed Bloody Mary and this kind of, in like the thermos cup. And I'm like, you know, if I get pulled over, it's like, does this count as an open container
Absolutely
violation?
It does.
Wasn't there like COVID rules that allowed that?
Excuse me, officer. I haven't touched this. I'm going to drink it.
Which I was. I mean, literally, it would have been like breathalyzer the hell out of me. I haven't had any to drink.
We got to start recording afternoon so we can start drinking beer again and maybe drink a lot more than what we do. But you have like 32 ounces. That's not 32 ounces. What is it? It might be
32. I think 32. It's a 32
ounce. You have 32 ounces of Bloody Mary. I have 12 ounces of blueberry lemon.
Well, keep in mind, like... 28 of the 32 ounces are ice and Bloody Mary mix.
Okay, that's fair. What kind of vodka do you go with? Did you go with the Grey Goose? Go with the
actually, it was Tito's.
Really?
Yeah.
And the Tito's the gluten-free?
I thought all vodka was gluten-free.
I have no idea.
How much freaking wheat and barley is in
I don't know.
Vodka?
Is there gluten in potatoes? I don't know.
I don't think so, but all of a sudden, as somebody with a couple of science degrees, I'm like, maybe I should know that. I believe not, but I mean, I thought gluten was essentially like a wheat, and there's a couple of other grains that have it in addition to wheat, but I thought it was essentially kind of a wheat and a few other grains type products. So.
Before we start talking football today, I do want to remind you to take the time to give this podcast a like. You can do that on Podbean. You can do it on iTunes. You can do it on Spotify. You can do it on iHeart. You can do it on Google Podcast. Because when you like us, that means more people may see us. And if you really want to take the time, go ahead and give this podcast a review. Some of you like it. Some of you don't like it. Understand if you don't like it, we're not for everybody, even though I kind of think we are. But if you can take the time, give us a like, give us a review, and that way more people can find the Husker Doc Talk podcast. Nebraska blows out Fordham, and Nebraska did something yesterday, Rob, that a lot of Division I or FBS schools couldn't do. Iowa State didn't blow out Northern Iowa. You had Montana upset Washington. You had Montana State push Wyoming to the brink. You had a lot of these FCS, better known as Division I AA schools, push Power 5 and even FBS schools to the brink. Nebraska didn't fall in that trap yesterday. They were supposed to beat Fordham, and they beat them quite handily.
Well, I don't want to rain on the parade here a little bit, but I mean, kind of there's a few things that I think people need to think about here. I'm happy for the win. Yes, she needed a win. Yes, she needed a big win. They did to a 1AA school what you're supposed to do to a 1AA school, which is blow them out of the water. Now, do I have critiques of that? And yes, I do. And it starts with the fact that Fordham – they're not a great 1AA school. I mean, they're a great school.
Academically.
They're not a football power by any means. Now, this is – you kind of rattled off a few schools there.
I rattled off like the best at FCS.
Yeah, Montana, Montana State, Northern Iowa especially, North Dakota State, South Dakota State – those are all schools that on any given day are going to be able to push middle of the road to even top tier Division I schools. They're going to push those schools, and they're going to push them hard, and they're going to pick up a handful of wins against them. That's not Fordham. Fordham is not one of those FCS schools that comes into town and pushes you nearly to halftime before you're able to establish a two-score lead on them. And that's what happened in this game. And I'm kind of, there's some foundational things here that I still worry about, and it's the fact that it took Nebraska almost until halftime to be able to get that two-score lead on these guys. Into the second half, you still saw some of these miscues. And when I'm talking about these miscues, I'm talking about tackles for loss by Fordham. I'm talking about turnovers, special teams miscues. Fordham averaged, I think it was 4.6 yards per rush against Nebraska's defense, and they averaged 5 yards per play against Nebraska's defense. That's solid.
Those are really good numbers.
Those are great numbers. I mean, if Fordham walks out of this, I guarantee you they're going to go back and look at the film and go, hey, we did some good things. Now, Fordham also got completely hamstrung by the fact that they threw three picks, and it was good plays by Nebraska's defense. You got a little pressure on the quarterback. He threw the ball up. Two of the three picks were basically kind of, I mean, it was on a hope and a prayer type passes. So it's Nebraska was in position to make the plays, and that's good. But at the same time, Fordham basically turned the ball over three times to Nebraska's defense, which is absolutely killer in a game like that where you just don't have the upfront talent and definitely not the depth to be able to hang with a Big Ten team.
Now, we were talking upstairs about, you know, Division I AA schools and Division I schools, especially the upper echelon. But you'll even find it maybe, and this might have been the case with Fordham, and that is a lot of these schools have the ability to play two quarters, two and a half quarters with Division or FBS teams, but the depth in the end starts to wear on, you know, these limited scholarship teams.
It doesn't at the same time just, you know, there's a talent gap there. I've never looked at Nebraska the last couple of years and thought, man, against an Alabama, against an Ohio State, yes. But otherwise, it's not like I'm looking at Nebraska and going, man, we are way less talented than Iowa or Wisconsin or Minnesota. We've got athletes. There's good athletes in Lincoln. You know, the last couple of years, you're seeing Nebraska players get drafted. You're seeing guys signing as free agents. Nebraska sending guys to the NFL. That is happening. We've got players in Lincoln, and we've got guys who are good athletes. We have athletes that are way, way better than what Fordham has. You know, and again, maybe I'm going back too far here, but I'm thinking that game should have been a game that Nebraska had firm control of by the end of the first quarter. And I say that, again, based on some of these foundational things that you still see Nebraska's offensive line trying to get a feel for the game and establish blocking up front. They had trouble doing that. You're still seeing these special teams miscues. You're still seeing Nebraska's defense giving up 5 yards per play to a 1AA offense that, they have some okay athletes, but holy cow, it's a 1AA offense, and it's a mid-tier one at that. Again, this is not Montana, Northern Iowa, North Dakota State Bison, or these teams that you're used to seeing in big games against Division I teams, like South Dakota State a couple of years ago should have knocked off Minnesota, and that was an 11-win Minnesota team. So this is not one of those schools, and the fact that it took Nebraska essentially two quarters to get a two-score lead and essentially three quarters to establish dominance, I find is kind of a foundational problem, especially coupled with the fact that I watched that Nebraska-Illinois game the week before and saw those exact same foundational problems against a team that I did not think was a very good football team. I do not think Illinois is very good.
Dude, Illinois got beat yesterday
by Texas San Antonio. They got beat by a Sun Belt team. Illinois is not that good.
No.
They beat Nebraska. Nebraska beat itself in a lot of ways, but, I mean, we're kind of used to that. I don't see Nebraska fixing those beat themselves issues right away here, because I still saw a lot of those foundational problems yesterday.
So when we look at the numbers, 633 yards of total offense, you pass for 304, you run for 329, you're only penalized twice. That's a good number.
That was a good one. I was happy about the penalties.
Third down conversion, 12 of 19. Fourth down conversions, 4 of 4.
That was one area where, again, Fordham had issues. I mean, the turnovers killed them. Their third down percentage killed them. I think they had 2 of 13 on third
downs.
Yeah,
it was brutal.
I mean, if you're not converting third downs, you're going to have some serious issues.
But you know how we were talking about depth, and what happens is no different than what happened to Nebraska against Illinois. Look at the time of possession. Nebraska had 36 minutes of time of possession compared
almost
to
almost an entire quarter longer.
I mean, and that's going to wear you down, right?
Yeah. I mean, that was a 36 to 23, 22, 23 minute
36, 21 to 23, 39.
Yeah, so it's... That's a big chunk of change right there when you're talking about that time of possession. But again, if you're Fordham and you're not converting third downs and you're turning the ball over, that means you're punting a lot and you're turning the ball over a lot to the opponents. So you just don't have the ball. When Fordham had the ball, they did some very good things against Nebraska's defense, and they did it game long.
So it was this a false positive in your mind then?
Big time.
Wow.
Yeah, I think Nebraska goes out, and I think they play maybe – I don't think they look as good as they looked against Fordham, but I think they look pretty solid against Buffalo. I think we lose to Oklahoma, but I – well
– Well, Oklahoma wasn't a barn burner yet.
Yeah,
they're a barn beater.
Here's the thing. Tulsa's not a horrible team. They've actually been.
You mean Tulane?
I'm sorry. Tulane has not been a horrible team.
Willie Fritz is a pretty good football coach.
Yeah, they're well coached. Keep in mind, Tulane's also not an FCS school either.
They're an AAC team.
And Oklahoma had it was like a 34-35-14 lead at halftime. I think that was a case where Oklahoma just they took their foot off the brakes, or I'm sorry, took their foot off the gas, kind of put the brakes on a little bit, and all of a sudden Tulane came storming back, and you're trying to recapture that momentum, and it's damn near impossible to. But Tulane's not a horrible team, and even within their conference, they're a well coached, fairly well regarded team. So I don't think that one is as bad as it looked. I mean, if you just saw the score, you're sitting there going, oh my gosh, Tulane kind of gave it to Oklahoma. It's like, nah, Oklahoma ran absolutely roughshod over Tulane for one half, and then, like I said, took their foot off the gas. So that I'm not as impressed with. But we're going to go to Oklahoma and have some serious issues, but I don't think anybody – saw that as being otherwise than that fact. What I worry about is once you get past Oklahoma, you got Michigan State sitting there who looked really good against Northwestern.
You know, I was watching that the other night, and I thought, why does Pat Fitzgerald stay at Northwestern? Because I know the hype's there, and I know he's an alum, but it was the Big Ten opener on a Friday night, and there was nobody at the game.
It's Chicago.
I know.
It's like L.A. I mean, people showed up for the UCLA-LSU game, but in general, people don't go to sporting events in L.A. People don't – well, they do. They go to pro events. You're talking about a pro sports city in L.A.
Unless it becomes the cool place, because USC, when Pete Carroll was there, was the cool place to hang out.
But Chicago's a pro sports town. New York
unless
is
it's
a
Notre
pro
Dame.
Sports town.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's Bulls, it's Bears, it's White Sox, it's the Cubs. I mean, those are pro sports cities.
You know, against Illinois, I liked what Marquise Stepp did early in that game, and then he disappeared. Yesterday, they give him the ball 18 times, goes for 101 yards. Is he going to separate himself and become that premier back for Nebraska?
You know, I'll be curious to see if that happens, because one thing that I think Gabe Irvin gets very underrated on that nobody pays attention to, the kid can block. Gabe Irvin is these first couple of games, Gabe Irvin has been a blocking machine as a running back. And that's, you know, the two things when I look at running backs anymore, there's two things you have to do that are probably even more important than running the ball if you want to be an NFL running back. And that's being able to block, and it's being able to catch passes. And Gabe Irvin is a solid pass catcher, and he is an outstanding blocker. He's got good vision as a blocking back, and that's key. If Stepp doesn't develop all three things in his skill set, I think Stepp actually will still continue to find himself as the second string guy. I do agree, though. He's the better runner of the two. In terms of carrying the ball, getting hard yardage, Stepp is the better running back. In terms of doing all three things and being an every down running back, I think it's still Gabe Irvin.
If you don't follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, you should, at DocTalkSports. He's picking up hundreds of new followers each and every week. He's a delight to follow on Twitter. He's a smart ass, much like he is here on the podcast. So make sure to follow Dr. Rob at DocTalkSports. Now, I will say this. Dr. Rob's very good at, if you DM him, I'm not saying I'm encouraging that, but he usually responds to DMs. And a lot of people, you know, feed you with rumors and innuendos. And listen, since this podcast started, we've had fun with some rumors, and we've stayed away from some rumors. And we're not stupid, folks, all right? We appreciate the emails. We appreciate the DMs about rumors that happened. But there are some rumors we're not going to tread on because those are pretty serious accusations. However, I am going to say this, and you all know what I'm talking about. I found it very peculiar yesterday that all of a sudden, after 4 years, we see a picture of Scott Frost walking off the field with his son and his wife. Because I've never seen that in the 4 years that he's been the head coach. If it's happened, let me know. Because I'm not saying it hasn't happened. I'm just saying that's like the first time we've seen a public sighting of the family.
And it was highly, highly publicized.
It was.
That was everywhere.
Did you find it weird? I mean, as soon as you saw it, what was your first? My first reaction was,
"This is staged."
Thank you.
You didn't want to say it.
No, that's the first. I'm like, oh, could you have planted that anymore? I mean, it was like, okay, we've heard the rumors. We've got to put it out there now that there's a solid family unit out there.
Yeah, that's the thing that I find interesting is the fact that you haven't seen that for several years. I say several years, 4 years.
I mean, I remember when Scott was hired, he insisted on the privacy of his mom and dad. He insisted on the privacy of his wife and family. They were never to be talked about. They were never to be shown. They were never to be anything.
And I guess my question is why now?
Exactly. If it's to combat the rumors, I get it. I do. I totally understand it. I hope it's legitimate.
I hope it is just rumors in that
sense. Yes.
But it does seem suspicious, and it is kind of one of those, why do it now when you haven't done it for 4 years? It's almost one of those things that I think if you're a media person, if you're a marketing person, it almost says, hey, yeah, we staged this more than it does, no, the rumors are false.
Yeah. I mean, it just came off as disingenuous, to be quite honest. But what else are you supposed to do, right? I mean, in last week after the loss against Illinois is when it really started to ramp up, right? You and I had heard the rumors several weeks ago. We chose not to address them because we don't know, right? We have no clue.
Well,
I don't care.
Well, and there's a high degree of what does it matter? Here's my comment for even commenting on it at all. Is the fact that, in my mind, it shouldn't matter. What happens in a person's private life should not have bearing on their professional and or public lives, as long as it's not hurting anybody. Now, again, there's people that get hurt in these situations on a personal level, but that it's not a public level thing.
Yeah,
by publishing this, by I don't again.
I think by publishing the photo, you bring even a greater attention to the rumors.
Exactly, and that's the reason I'll comment on it at all is the fact that this was something I never would have put words to on this podcast.
But they
until you decided to make this public, and it seems like an incredibly staged thing that was done to make this public. And now it's one of those, all right, well, kind of those little unwritten rules of, hey, there's some subject matter that you just don't talk about. All of a sudden, those just got removed. Oh, you're gonna have this, what appears to be fairly highly staged, first time in 4 years, doing this. Now it's a talking point.
And again, if somebody else has seen a photo, we just can't remember one. That's why we're saying the first time in 4 years. But if somebody else remembers one, let us know. We'll gladly admit we were wrong. I'm just saying it doesn't happen. We haven't seen it that often, right?
I haven't seen it at all. But again, you make the point. Does it seem staged? Yes, it does, especially when you haven't seen this in 4 years.
But it shows to the growing amount of... And listen, Bo Pelini talked about it, right? Bo Pelini talked about it in the podcast with Will Compton. I mean, the amount of pressure that it takes to be the Nebraska coach is it's immense. It really is from a fan standpoint. It doesn't seem like the Nebraska media is all that crushing. I can see where the weight of it can get to you. It's not New York media. I'm not saying that.
See, that's the thing. It's a fishbowl, and it's the only thing people are paying attention to. Because I lived in New York, played for the Giants. The media out there is just, it's something else. But on the flip side, they're also covering the Jets and the Yankees and the New Jersey Devils and the Nets and the Knicks. And then they're also covering a handful of college sports, so on and so forth. And you know what else? They're covering Broadway, and they're covering the crime beat. I mean, it's just one of those, you got a million different things that they're covering. So you're a medium-sized fish in a huge pond when you're in New York. When you're in Nebraska, you're a giant fish in one hell of a tiny fishbowl.
And when you're losing, it gets...
it gets amplified.
It gets amplified. If you're winning, nobody cares what you're doing. They don't. They don't give a crap. If you're winning, if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, and that is win football games or win basketball games or win baseball games, whatever, people will turn the other way on anything. They won't go looking for rumors. They won't start making stuff up. But that's when you struggle, when your back's against the wall, is when the world starts crumbling in around you and it gets a lot tougher to maintain. And then you might have to go, stage a photo. Might be one of those things you have to do. Time for another edition of Ticket Talk, brought to you by Ticket Express. Back again this week is our good friend of the Husker Doc Talk podcast, Mr. Chad Carr, owner and founder of Ticket Express. And Chad, Nebraska gets a win. I will just make the assumption that that helps ticket sales for the following week when they're back at home.
Great question, Trav. It does, and it also helps ticket sales for the rest of the games as well. If you read some of the posts on social media, a lot of people taking their kids to their first Husker game. People, there's this pent-up demand for people wanting to go and see the Huskers live and in person, and so it just puts everybody in a lot better mood.
Do you see after that Illinois game, did you feel like there was less interest in this game? I know it's Fordham. I know it's an FCS school. That loss to Illinois, do you feel like that dampened anything? Or is it just like, it doesn't matter? It's the first Nebraska home game in 2 years that people can actually go to. We're going no matter what.
I think that it's a combination. I think that a lot of people... are so hungry for the team to get back to its winning ways that when they saw the Illinois game, it's like, well, here we go again. But the weather, for the most part, was perfect for the Fordham game.
Oh, weather was perfect.
A lot of people were excited to basically have fans back in the stands after a year and a half. And so the excitement in the stadium, and I was at the game, it was just a really, really cool feeling. And I think that a lot of people just kind of forgot what that felt like to see the Huskers live after a year and a half.
You know, I was going to ask you a volleyball question, but we only got time for one more question. I'm going to pivot and say, hey, the Oklahoma game, it is, and I'm probably throwing you for a loop here, but, you know, Oklahoma kind of struggled against Tulane, maybe piqued some more interest, but there will be a lot of people who want to drive to Norman. What's the demand like, and how good of tickets can you get for people who want to go see Nebraska play Oklahoma?
You know, it's obviously a lot of people have that game circled on their calendars for obvious reasons, and it's going to be a great game. You know, the Tulane game got relocated from Tulane to Norman, so that wasn't necessarily supposed to be a home game for them, but it was. I think the interest goes up a little bit because, you know, Oklahoma was supposed to be this unbeatable team, and they almost got beat by Tulane. And so I think that for Nebraska fans that are excited to see Nebraska in action against the top 25 opponent, you know, that's why they play the game. Any given Saturday, any team can beat any other team because of the parity in college football. And we still have great tickets, both in the Nebraska allotment of seats, or if you want to set like really good seats on a yard line, we have those too.
Excellent stuff, as always, Chad. We'll dive into some volleyball and stuff again next week, but thanks for taking the time, and it's always good catching up, talking tickets.
Thanks, guys.
Up next for the Huskers will be the Bulls of Buffalo. This is the team that was used to be coached by Lance Leipold, who, believe it or not, was like a special assistant to Bill Callahan at Nebraska for a little bit of point, but really kind of made his mark working with Pat Burns at the University of Nebraska at Omaha. Was the running backs coach, I believe, to start. Left, came back to be the offensive coordinator. Then he went at UNO. Then he went to Wisconsin Whitewater, which was his alma mater, and became one of the most prolific Division III coaches of all time. Took the jump going from Division III to Division I to Buffalo. And it took him a couple years, but got it turned around. And now Lance is the head coach at Kansas, which struggled but beat South Dakota open the season. Buffalo, on the other hand, which has some talent because you have that culture set and you have that infrastructure that was set by Lance Leipold, beat Wagner to open the season 69-7. Now, I don't think they're going to...
Now, here's the thing, too. Buffalo is not an FCS school.
No, they're an FBS. They're a MAC school. Yeah, the MAC's not a bad league.
Yeah, they're a MAC conference school. They're a solid school within the MAC. It's there is a jump between FCS and FBS. There really is. And this is an FBS school. Now, they lost Leipold. They lost a handful of guys who transferred.
Yeah. A lot of them went to KU.
They kind of Leipold definitely hammered the transfer portal for some of his Buffalo players. And so they took some losses when Leipold left.
I would agree with you.
But I still think you're going to see a much better quality of opponent than what you saw with Fordham.
And offensively, look at the numbers Nebraska's defense gave up to Fordham, and you're going to face an offense that likes to attack, likes to spread it all over the place. Does that worry you?
Yeah, it does. When you're giving up, like I said, 4.6 per rush and 5.0 yards per play on average, what's a better team going to do to exploit that? If Buffalo can come in, watch the turnovers, hit a little bit of a better percentage on that on those third downs, this is going to be a team that could take Nebraska. Again, yeah, Nebraska should win this, and they should win it by going away.
You think going away?
They
What's
should.
What's going away, 21, 28, more than that?
Oh, I would say Nebraska should win by at least three scores.
Rob, this isn't Nebraska.
I get that. I'm telling you, I said should. I didn't say would. There is a difference here. But if Buffalo takes care of business, don't be surprised if this game goes well into the second half. If Buffalo comes out and is getting 4.6 per rush and 5 yards per play total, like
they might win the game,
like Fordham did, and if they cannot turn it over three times and not have as crappy a third down percentage,
yeah.
They double that third down percentage. I think, like I said, Fordham was 2 out of 13. If Buffalo comes in and gets, say, 5 or 6 out of 13, if they hit like 45-50%, this is a game that goes well into the second half. And I think you're going to have like South Dakota and Lincoln a couple of years ago where they – was that South Dakota or South Dakota State? The Amir Abdullah run.
I thought that was South Dakota State.
Okay. That game where we needed a Hall of Fame level highlight, again, against an FCS school, to be able to pull out a win. So I'm not saying Scott Frost is the only guy who had an FCS school look good against him here. But you could have Buffalo come in, and it's going to be one of those games where Nebraska's going to need some kind of magic tricks at the end of the game to pull it out if they're statistically better than what Fordham was in really only a couple of different categories.
You know what I was happy about yesterday? And I think feelings are tempered. And I don't know if you'll ever have the fan base jump fully on board again the rest of the season. Because I didn't see on the socials yesterday, Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, where everybody was like, all right, Nebraska's back, baby. I didn't see that. I think much like you, they're like, okay, this is a middle of the road FCS team. This you'll take the win, but it wasn't.
You did have JoJo Domans saying this was a program win for Nebraska.
Hold on.
No, I don't think he meant program defining win. I think he meant it was good for the program to get this win
mentally.
Yeah, and get mentally and get all the guys playing who did, because I think they said they had 88 total players who played in the game. If you want to think about how far we are from where Nebraska was in their heyday, this was the kind of game that, I mean, when Nebraska played an opponent like this, and I'll throw Pacific out there, Osborne yanked all starters at the end of the first quarter. End of the first quarter, all starters were pulled. We were looking for guys. We had an equipment manager that had played high school quarterback that they actually suited up and took snaps at quarterback late in the Pacific game in 94.
I think I remember that game.
So, yeah, I mean, it was nuts. I mean, I remember we had basically taken our pads off second half, and we were hanging out on the sideline eating hot dogs. So,
did that upset you as a player to get pulled after the first quarter?
Oh, no, we totally got it.
Okay, sometimes you want to be like, can I play a half at least? You know,
because, yeah, I mean, I think at that point, I think we were up either 21-0 or 28-0. And it was looking like this was going to get really ugly. And the final, I think, was like 70-21. So, I mean, it's not like the scoring stopped when we came out. I think the second string played the second quarter, had a number of third string guys getting in. By the time the second half started, I think Osborne went out. I think the second string offense and defense each took one series at the start of the second half, and then they were pulled for the rest of the game as well, too. So even your second stringers were riding pine for most of the third quarter. So, but that's how it's supposed to be against a team like that. Now, we played some pretty good I got to go back and double-check what division they were in, because in my time at Nebraska, we did play a couple lower-tier teams. We played Middle Tennessee State, and we played North Texas State at the time. And I believe both of those games were, we had a series scheduled with Arkansas, a home and away with Arkansas, and I think Arkansas pulled out of the agreement. And we ended up, it was kind of one of those, God, we got to find somebody to fill out the schedule. And those were basically the only two teams we could find in a two-year span. And they had some good football players. But it's, Pacific was probably the worst. Middle Tennessee State actually gave us fits for about a half. But, I mean, ultimately, you demolished those teams and put them away. I have a problem getting too fired up and, like Doman said, considering this a program game. It speaks to where the program is at right now. When to have a program type game,
be a win over Fordham.
It's a mid-tier FCS school to get that. That's the kind of win. That's the kind of game you want against Maryland, against Rutgers, against Illinois. And Nebraska's going to have trouble doing that this year. We get past Oklahoma. I'm not sure I care about what happens against Buffalo unless they flat out lose. I don't care what happens against Oklahoma because I think most people are like, yeah, we're going to get smoked anyway. What I care about is it's going to be interesting to see what happens after the Oklahoma game when you get Michigan State, Northwestern, and Minnesota, and Wisconsin, and Iowa, and Ohio State. Those are the games that are going to be interesting and are going to be a barometer of where this team is at.
Well, let's transition right into the Big Ten because you brought what's coming up, and there was a number of – what I liked about the Big Ten this week, and I absolutely loved what we saw with Nebraska and Illinois – I love these teams opening up with conference games. It changed, you know, I was talking to Scott Spreitzer in Las Vegas yesterday. He's a professional handicapper. He's from Omaha. He's been handicapping well over 25 years down in Las Vegas. He doesn't like these because he said sometimes you can win early money because guys will sandbag in that week one. So, but from a fan perspective, he totally understood the dynamic of, okay.
Oh, it's way more interesting.
Yes.
Here's a game that counts.
Yes.
Right off the bat.
You know, and we didn't know what to expect because you brought up Michigan State right away. We didn't know what to expect from Michigan State. They have, like, I think over 20 transfers, 16 in the top two. The culture's almost had a complete turnover. They go on the road. They beat Northwestern 38-31. Or 38-21, sorry.
Ran all over them. Their starting running back had, what, like 264 yards rushing?
Yes.
Not as a team, the starting running
Kenneth
back.
Kenneth Walker had 23 carries, 264 yards, and four touchdowns.
Oh. Which, you know, you can look at Northwestern a little bit in the sense that I think all three starting linebackers graduated off of a pretty good team last year. I mean, that was a solid Northwestern team. So, but yeah, you lose all three starting linebackers and they're all good. You're going to take a hit in terms of your ability to play defense. So, but that's also, you know what, you look at Northwestern, a bad year for Pat Fitzgerald is losing three out of your first four games.
And then go win the rest?
And then they kind of hit stride and have an okay finish to the season. A great year for Fitzgerald is going 10-2. You ask why he doesn't leave. They never have fan support there. Pat Fitzgerald can write. He is right. I guarantee it. Their athletic director walks into Fitzgerald's office, puts down a checkbook, and just says, write your own.
Yeah.
What do you want? What do you need? What do we got to do to keep you here?
Boy, that would just be so hard to go out and have, like, zero fans there. People just don't appreciate college football the way. Now, they got the best indoor facility in the country right there on the lake. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, they've got great facilities.
The stadium's beautiful.
Yeah, but still, no, it's not beautiful. Nobody's there.
I get it, but... Yeah, you know what? I think that the overall dynamic that he has at Northwestern, like, I'm going to be sad if he leaves there.
Just because of the loyalty. And I get it. I understand. And he is extremely loyal.
But he's the kind of coach who, yeah, there's a guy. Let's get Fitzgerald at Nebraska.
Well, it's funny.
And I'm already looking for replacements.
I'm not ready.
I'm not ready to have that conversation. I'm just
yet
saying,
because a lot of the emails people want us to discuss who's next at Nebraska. I'm not ready. Listen, I like to poke the bear more than anybody. I do. You guys know that.
So okay,
but I'm not ready to have that conversation yet. I will say this:
let's have this conversation right now.
Well, I
got a question for you. Let's say,
Rob, nobody wants the job.
Let's say
nobody of substance.
Frost goes 4-8.
He's gone.
Trev goes full UNO.
Yeah.
And fires Scott.
Okay.
Which, I mean, if he goes 4-8, I think most fans would be like, this sucks. We feel super bad that this didn't work out.
Yes. But they'd be okay with a change.
But we get it.
Yes.
I don't even say they got to be okay. They'll understand.
Yes.
I don't think people understood when Solich got fired. I think there was a lot of people who, as many people didn't like Bo Pelini, there's a lot of Bo Pelini fans out there who didn't understand when Bo Pelini got fired.
And you know what's happening is that I get why people don't like Bo or when he got fired, they're like, yeah. But you hear more and more players, and Niles Paul did it the other day. So Bo Pelini's best coach I've ever played for. I mean, you have a lot of those players.
A lot of players really loved Bo.
Yes.
I haven't met a lot of anti-Bo players. There's guys who didn't like him. Don't get me wrong. There are people who did not like Bo within that program. But God, those players, most of those players loved playing for Bo Pelini.
Now, I was. It's funny that you brought this up.
Well, hold on. I wasn't finished with
my thoughts. Sorry.
Okay. What I'm saying is, let's say Frost goes 4-8 this year, 3-9, whatever. A number that's not a gray area.
Okay.
6-6 is a gray area. 7-5 is gray. I would even say 5-7 could be a little gray area. But let's say he goes 3-9, 4-8. Trev pulls the trigger and fires him.
Okay.
I don't think there's going to be this huge contingent of fans out there going, I don't get it. I don't know why he pulled the trigger so early. I don't know why we didn't give Frost another 2 years. I think people would be upset that it didn't work out, but I think people would understand the why and would be okay with the why of it. So let's say that happens. After only 1 year at KU, could Nebraska get Lance Leipold?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Do you think Lance would be like, yeah, I don't view this as a good job, or do you think he's too locked in contractually to Kansas?
Let me change my answer to that. Yes, they could get him. Would they want him? That's what I don't know. Would they? I think Nebraska. I had this conversation yesterday in the studio as I was getting ready to do my show, and that was, if you go back to when Solich got fired. Okay, I got why Frank Solich was hired and handpicked by Tom Osborne. I get it, but if you go back to when Solich got fired, nobody of substance has wanted this job.
But it was different guys running the show at the time.
I get it. But now,
the whole Perlman, Steve Peterson dynamic, Perlman, Eichhorst dynamic, that's gone now.
I understand. But is the program to a place where somebody says, let's use Matt Campbell, for example? Is it a step up to go to Nebraska from Iowa State?
Well, I don't know. You just about got beat by Northern Iowa.
You know what I'm...
No, I know. You're talking about the overall culture within that athletic department.
Yes. Is it a step up? I think Matt Campbell eventually wants to be an NFL guy. So I think...
You've told me that before, that it's pretty unlikely he takes another college job.
Or if he did, it would have to be like Ohio State,
Notre Dame,
something of that. And I think we're getting that to a lot of places. Like, I know people have a hard time realizing this about Iowa State. Facilities-wise, culture-wise, everything, it's doing just fine. What's going to hurt Iowa State is in 3 years when Texas and Oklahoma are gone.
It's the conference affiliation problem.
The money you get from your conference is going to decrease by probably half.
Yeah.
You're going to become a non-player, so that's going to prohibit you from keeping up. So, you know, I mean, would a guy, Matt Campbell's a big name. Would he take a Nebraska job? I don't think so.
Well, I guess here's my thought process on it, because I think Steve Peterson, when he made that change with Solich, one, I think a lot of the why was he and Solich just did not like each other.
I think it went back before.
Oh, that went back 10 years prior before that happened. So, yeah, that was what happened there. But I think Steve Peterson's logic was, I want one of these name hires. I'm going to bring in my buddy Dave Wannstedt from the Miami Dolphins, and then that fell through. And then he went looking for the next
Houston
big name.
Nut. The stupid plane was sitting on the tarmac down in Fayetteville forever. I mean, it just became nobody wanted the job.
Well, and that was a really weird dynamic, too, because I think people fully understood at that time, which I just said people don't understand why Solich was fired, but I think people understood Steve Peterson was going after Dave Wannstedt.
Yes.
That was going to be a done deal, and then the Miami Dolphins came in and locked up Wannstedt for another season contractually, and it killed it. But I think that the notion there was is Steve Peterson wanted a name guy. This last time around, Nebraska went after one of their own. Let's get the hot hand. He's a Nebraska alum, quarterback of a national title team, so on and so forth.
But he even had to think about it. He thought about the Florida job before he thought about the Nebraska job. I mean,
it was at least in the mix.
Yes.
I'm not saying it was one of those, I'm going to evaluate this before I evaluate Nebraska. I think he was trying to evaluate what's going to be the best move for me ultimately. And at the time, I'm not saying it was a bad decision. At the time, I thought it was the best hire Nebraska could have made.
I would agree with you 100%.
It hasn't worked out. Sometimes it doesn't work out.
Yet. Maybe I'm still like...
God, you are an optimist on this.
I know.
And I'm usually the guy who's an insane optimist.
You know, it's funny because I don't think this works out. I get accused of being a Husker homer over at Iowa, which is funny because I defend...
Because you're really a Cyclone fan.
I defend him all the time. I defend him. And I don't know why I do. But I'm like, maybe it's because it was a lot more broken than people ever will realize.
But I don't know if it's been fixed yet. And I don't know if they've fixed what's broken. There's some culture issues down there that I'm still worried about. Because we're seeing the exact same problems week in and week out. And I guess that's kind of where I started off with the whole Fordham thing, is the problems that plagued Nebraska against Illinois, I'm not sure those got fixed against Fordham. It's just you've got an FCS school, a 1AA school, and a mid-tier one at that, that doesn't remotely have the depth that Nebraska has, that wasn't able to hang with us because they're a mid-tier FCS school that doesn't remotely have the depth to compete. So, it's not like Nebraska fixed problems from the Illinois game. We still saw some dumb penalties. We still saw some poor coaching decisions. We still saw an offensive line that had trouble establishing the run in the first half. We saw a defense that gave up 5 yards per play. We saw special teams miscues. The stuff that has plagued Nebraska and plagued them in the Illinois game, we're still there in that Fordham game. They didn't fix the problems that caused them to lose to Illinois. They just happened to smoke Fordham because it's a mid-tier FCS school that doesn't have any depth.
You say culture problem. Are we talking? What I hear is a coaching problem. You use the word culture.
One in the same.
Really?
That's a one in the same thing, because as a coach, you have to establish a culture, and that was something Frost wanted to bring in.
Why hasn't he been able to do it? People around him?
I do worry about that. I mean, I worry about who's around him. again, there's a lot of rumors floating around Lincoln, and I'm not going to name what they are. Hop on any message board and you can find them.
Message boards are still a thing?
They're still a thing.
Really?
They are everywhere.
Damn, I hadn't. I really guess hadn't.
Who,
like,
guess who lives on message boards?
Not
sports
you.
Sports fans. I don't. Yeah. Sports fans.
I
do,
thought
though.
Just Twitter was the message board.
That's a big one. I mean, I think it gets used as one. There are specific. I mean, dude, Reddit is alive and well.
Do you got to pay for the Reddit?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never been on the Reddit.
There are some people. I don't think it's. Do you know what's weird? I don't think it's as big in the Midwest. I think it's an East Coast, West Coast thing.
Interesting.
But I think, yeah, there's a lot of people who live on Reddit message boards in regards to. In regards to local sports, so
okay,
jump on it sometime. But here, the reason I say it's a culture thing is because we're seeing the exact same shortcomings week in and week out every year. The stuff that plagued Nebraska and kept them from winning games year one, we saw the exact same issues year two. And then we saw the exact same issues. Now, I get it, COVID. And I was the first person to say, hey, you can, to a degree, you kind of got to throw this season out because of COVID. And let's see what happens after that. We're two games in. One was an ugly loss, completely manifested by the exact same problems you saw in years one, two, and three. And then we see this big win over a mid-tier FCS school. But if you look at it, those same problems were there. Inability to establish the run. Inability to stick with the run. They kind of stuck with the run a bit, but God, it took them a half really to get it going.
And this is why you're saying it's a false positive.
It's a false positive. You saw the special teams miscues. I would have, and I get that an FCS school in 2021 is a different animal than an FCS school in 1994. I get that. They are more talented now and have a little more depth than the 94 FCS school has. But that doesn't change the fact it's an FCS school. That made the whatever it was, the 56-7 or whatever that final was. You know what? There's some smoke and mirrors there, and don't get swayed by that because we've got another team coming in that is probably a better team than Fordham. And Fordham had some specific problems that kept them from putting up points, namely turnovers and third down conversions. But if you look at Buffalo, if they're able to come in and fix the turnovers and the third down conversions, they're going to score some points, and it's going to be a hell of a lot different picture than what you saw against Fordham.
So you used a phrase, and I don't know if anybody else heard it. You said, it's never going to change. So,
well, it hasn't yet after four years and pledges to change.
So, but here's my question. You said the gray area would be 7-6. I mean, so if it's not going to change, does that 500 or one game above 500 record change it? Or just from a perception thing, you can't make a change at that point?
I think there's a handful of things that can cover up a lot of problems. And I think if Nebraska wins a couple more games per year, well, as I say, per year. Let's say they go 6-6 or 7-5 during the regular season and go to a bowl game. You pick up a few more wins and just purely confidence, winning a few games, quote unquote, learning how to win, that hides a lot of these shortcomings. But I think Nebraska's got some culture problems and some deep-seated problems that I haven't changed here two games into the fourth season that go back to the exact same issues I saw during the first season. Those haven't changed yet. We're seeing the same product on the field. I want to see a different product. Now, you look at Mike Riley, I thought we saw a little bit of a different product year one to year two, and then the wheels just fell off the bus year three.
That's because he didn't recruit very good players.
I agree. He didn't develop them either. Yeah. I thought Bo Pelini, I wanted to see, I saw a conversion to from a Big 12, kind of a run and gun type of team, to a Big 10 team happening during the Bo Pelini era. I think Bo Pelini is a guy who is learning to coach as a head coach, is still learning. Now, I'll be curious to see what he does moving forward if he goes back into coaching. The guy is sitting on literally millions of dollars.
Yeah, he's not hurting by any means.
No, I mean, Bo Pelini can do Bussin' with the Boys podcast, which that was outstanding, by the way. He can do podcasts and maybe do some media things going forward here, never have to go back into coaching. But I'll be curious to see what happens to him if he does get back into coaching, what kind of changes we see going forward.
You know who I'd like to have in here? He hates my guts. He hates my guts with a passion. I would love to have Steve Peterson in here because I'd ask him point blank, would you do it again? Hindsight's 20/20. Did you learn anything? And would
you did ask him that.
I didn't ask him if he'd fire Frank Solich.
No, I'm asking you, have you talked to him at some point and asked him that, or you're saying you would ask him?
The last time I saw anybody with the Peterson family, I saw his wife up at Pitch in Omaha, in Dundee, and she called me a couple names and said I was an asshole and then left me alone. I bought her entire table of drinks, offered a mea culpa, and I got no thank you. I spent like $180 on drinks for the table, and I didn't get a thank you. They hate me a lot, and that's fine.
But you're saying you would like to ask
him. I would like to ask him, listen, okay, time has passed.
Would you change anything?
Would you have said, I will not allow this program to gravitate to mediocrity? Why did you say that? Why?
Well, I think that was him trying to cover up, I'm firing Frank Solich after Frank just had a bad season, made necessary changes, turned everything around, and has Nebraska on track for a 10-win season. And yet I'm firing him because on a personal level, he and I hate each other. That's why he fired Solich. So if you're going
to
ask that question,
I'd love to just have a beer with him. I
would tell you that's him saying, in hindsight, I guarantee you, he fires Solich every single time for that reason alone. The two of them hated each other's guts.
I have no idea where Steve Peterson is even these days. And I'd really like to talk to Harvey Perlman too, because he's the one who totally destroyed everything. But see, it would be combative like that just to start off with.
But I think Perlman would feel like all of this is perfectly fine, because I don't think Perlman puts a lot of emphasis on athletics.
And that's the problem with academics. Academics think they're a lot more important to the overall mission of the university than what they really are. They need to work hand in hand. Great universities understand the value of academics, and academics on the other side understands the tremendous promotional value that athletics can bring to an institution.
Absolutely.
And if you think one is less than the other, if you think athletics takes a lesser role, you are sorely mistaken.
The only schools where the academics are the face of the university are your Ivy League schools.
Yes.
After that, I guarantee you talk to Rice fans, they're more concerned about how the baseball team's going to be doing than they do about the academics.
You know, when Northern Iowa beat Kansas in the NCAA tournament, enrollment went up tenfold because people were like, where's Northern Iowa? I didn't know about this school. And just the publicity alone, the earned media, the dollar value of that was of a tremendous asset.
Well, in a school like Nebraska, where you have the athletic department flat out paying for academic programs. Hey, are you going to play the music here right now?
Pretty soon. Down? No, well, you can keep going.
No, I wanted to give a couple shout outs
here.
Okay,
yeah, give the shout outs.
Fordham University.
Okay.
I don't think he started, but one of their really productive linebackers was James Conway. True freshman out of Millard West.
Wow.
Kid was number 48 for Fordham. played a ton in the game. I think he didn't have the 30. Who's the kid? Ryan started with a G. He was their team captain. I think number 47. He was the kid who had 30 tackles in the game.
Wow.
Tied an NCAA record for tackles in a game. Actually tied the Memorial Stadium record with Cleet Pillen. I think from 19, either 77 or 78, Cleet had a 30-tackle game. But anyway, James Conway, Millard West grad, true freshman at Fordham. Kid is smarter than hell. He was an absolute tackling machine here in the Metro Conference in Omaha for the last three seasons. Had a great game for Fordham on Saturday, back playing in his home state at Memorial Stadium. You know, if you want to keep an eye on a guy from another school, which, again, it's Fordham, a little bit more of your obscure football schools to follow, but you got a kid who's doing really well there, and he's an Omaha kid, and he kind of bears a follow. The other kid I wanted to talk about was Cade Haberman, one of my son's teammates at Omaha Westside. Played as a true freshman in short yardage goal line situations. He got a fair amount of playing time just during regular downs as well in Northern Illinois' win over Georgia Tech in Atlanta. There's another one. I mean,
there's a Mac school beating
the ACC. Yeah. Northern Illinois scored a touchdown and converted a 2-point conversion with 38 seconds left, and then blocked a 60-yard field goal attempt as time expired to end up winning the game to knock off Georgia Tech at Bobby Dodd Stadium in Atlanta. So. Big shout out to Cade. That was awesome to see him out there playing as a true freshman in a big game Saturday night, lights on. Love seeing the Omaha kids out there tearing it up.
It's a reminder, there's football talent in Omaha.
There is.
There's football talent in Nebraska.
There is. Avante Dickerson's on the two deep up at Oregon. You got Cole Payton.
Keegan's on the two deep at Iowa.
Yeah, Keegan. Cole Payton up at North Dakota State. The play right now, Omaha's churning out D1 kids left and right. It was fun seeing that from those guys yesterday.
You know what's going to happen, Rob, is that we're going to get a bunch of feedback saying we were too negative today. We were too negative. Or you were. You were too negative today.
I was realist.
Ooh, I like the way that sounds. If you want
if I'm wrong, 6 weeks from now, 8 weeks from now,
you'll admit it.
I will fully admit I was wrong.
So if you want more of that realism, make sure to follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. Again, at Doc Talk Sports. If you want some Husker gear, make sure to get to Husker Hounds. Nebraska home again this weekend to play Buffalo. Check out those extended hours from all three locations at Husker Hounds, or just buy online at huskerhounds.com. Thanks to Chad Carr for coming on and having another edition of a Ticket Talk brought to you by Ticket Express. You need tickets to this weekend's game? Go to TicketExpress.com and, of course, the Remington Trophy. The 2021 Remington Trophy presentation has not been announced yet. The details will be coming soon, but usually that takes place at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln in January. And, of course, Husker Max, thank you so much for distributing this podcast. Always great to be partnered up with you guys, as you can get great message boards and news at HuskerMax.com. For Dr. Rob Zadiska, I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.